has seen slavery for himself, that it is a beautiful patriarchal institution, that the slaves don't want their freedom, that they have hallelujah meetings and other religious privileges. What does he know of the half-starved wretches toiling from dawn till dark at the plantation, of mothers shrieking for their children torn from their arms by slave traders, of young girls dragged down into moral filth, of pools of blood around the whipping post, of hounds trained to tear human flesh, of men screwed into cotton gins to die? The slaveholder showed him none of these things, and the slaves dared not tell of them if he had asked them. There is a great difference between Christianity and religion at the South. If a man goes to the communion table and pays money into the treasury of the church, no matter if it be the price of blood, he is called religious. If a pastor has offspring by a woman not his wife, the church dismiss him if she is a white woman, but if she is colored, it does not hinder his continuing to be their good shepherd. When I was told that Dr. Flint had joined the Episcopal Church, I was much surprised. I suppose that religion had a purifying effect on the character of men. But the worst persecutions I endured from him were after he was a communicant. The conversation of the doctor the day after he had been confirmed certainly gave me no indication that he had renounced the devil and all his works. In answer to some of his usual talk, I reminded him that he had just joined the church. "Yes, Linda," said he, "it was proper for me to do so. I am getting in years, and my position in a society requires it, and it puts an end to all the damned slang. You would do well to join the church, too, Linda." Page 95. "There are sinners enough in it already," rejoined I. "If I could be allowed to live like a Christian, I should be glad." "You can do what I require, and if you are faithful to me, you will be as virtuous as my wife," he replied. I answered that the Bible didn't say so. His voice became hoarse with rage. "How dare you preach to me about your infernal Bible?" he exclaimed. "What right have you, who are my Negro, to talk to me about what you would like and what you wouldn't like? I am your master, and you shall obey me." No wonder the slaves sang, "Oh, Satan's church is here below. Up to God's free church I hope to go." Page 96 is blank. Page 97. Starting chapter 14, Another Link to Life. I had not returned to my master's house since the birth of my child. The old man raved to have me thus removed from his immediate power, but his wife vowed by all that was good and great she would kill me if I came back, and he did not doubt her word. Sometimes he would stay away for a season. Then he would come and renew the old threadbare discourse about his forbearance and my ingratitude. He labored most unnecessarily to convince me that I had lowered myself. The venomous old reprobate had no need of decanting on that theme. I felt humiliated enough. My unconscious babe was the ever-present witness to my shame. I listened with silent contempt when he talked about my having forfeited his good opinion, but I shed bitter tears that I was no longer worthy of being respected by the good and pure. Alas, slavery still held me in its poisonous grasp. There was no chance for me to be respectable. There was no prospect of being able to lead a better life. Sometimes, when my master found that I still refused to accept what he called his kind offers, he would threaten to sell my child. "Perhaps that will humble you," said he. Humble me? Was I not already in the dust? But his threat lacerated my heart. I knew the law gave him power to fulfill it, for slaveholders have been cunning enough to enact that the child shall follow the condition of the mother, not of the father, thus taking care that licentiousness shall not interfere with avarice. This reflection made me clasp my innocent babe all the more firmly to my heart. Horrid visions passed through my mind when I thought of his liability to fall into the slave trader's hands. I wept over him and said, "Oh, my child, perhaps they will leave you in some cold cabin to die and then throw you into a hole as if you were a dog." Page 98. When Dr. Flint learned that I was again to be a mother, he was exasperated beyond measure. He rushed from the house and returned with a pair of shears. I had a fine head of hair, and he often railed about my pride of arranging it nicely. He cut every hair close to my head, storming and swearing all the time. I replied to some of his abuse, and he struck me. Some months before, he had pitched me downstairs in a fit of passion, and the injury I received was so serious that I was unable to turn myself in bed for many days. He then said, "Linda, I swear by God I will never raise my hand against you again." But I knew that he would forget his promise. After he discovered my situation, he was like a restless spirit from the pit. He came every day, and I was subjected to such insults as no pen can describe. I would not describe them if I could. They were too low, too revolting. I tried to keep them from my grandmother's knowledge as much as I could. I knew she had enough to sadden her life without having my troubles to bear. When she saw the doctor treat me with violence and heard him utter oaths, terrible enough to palsy a man's tongue, she could not always hold her peace. It was natural and motherlike that she should try to defend me, but it only made matters worse. When they told me my newborn babe was a girl, my heart was heavier than had ever been before. Slavery is terrible for men, but it is far more terrible for women. Superadded to the burden common to all, they have wrongs and sufferings and mortifications peculiarly their own. Dr. Flint had sworn that he would make me suffer to my last day for this new crime against him, as he called it, and as long as he had me in his power, he kept his word. On the fourth day after the birth of my babe, he entered my room suddenly and commanded me to rise and bring my baby to him. The nurse who took care of me had gone out of the room to prepare some nourishment, and I was alone. There was no alternative. I rose, took up my babe, and crossed the room to where he sat. "Now stand there," said he, "till I tell you to go back." Page 99. My child bore a strong resemblance to her father and to the deceased Mrs. Sands, her grandmother. He noticed this, and while I stood before him, trembling with weakness, he heaped upon me and my little one every vile epithet he could think of. Even the grandmother in her grave did not escape his curses. In the midst of his vituperations, I fainted at his feet. This recalled him to his senses. He took the baby from my arms, laid it on the bed, dashed cold water in my face, took me up and shook me violently to restore my consciousness before anyone entered the room. Just then my grandmother came in, and he hurried out of the house. I suffered in consequence of this treatment, but I begged my friends to let me die rather than send for the doctor. There was nothing I dreaded so much as his presence. My life was spared, and I was glad for the sake of my little ones. Had it not been for these ties to life, I should have been glad to be released by death, though I had lived only 19 years. Always it gave me a pang that my children had no lawful claim to a name. Their father offered his, but if I had wished to accept the offer, I dared not while my master lived. Moreover, I knew it would not be accepted at their baptism. A Christian name they were at least entitled to, and we resolved to call my boy for our dear good Benjamin, who had gone far away from us. My grandmother belonged to the church, and she was very desirous of having the children christened. I knew Dr. Flint would forbid it, and I did not venture to attempt it. But chance favored me. He was called to visit a patient out of town and was obliged to be absent during Sunday. "Now is the time," said my grandmother. "We will take the children to church and have them christened." When I entered the church, recollections of my mother came over me, and I felt subdued in spirit. There she had presented me for baptism without any reason to feel ashamed. She had been married and had such legal rights as slavery allows to a slave. The vows had at least been sacred to her, and she had never violated them. I was glad she was not alive to know under what different circumstances her grandchildren were presented for baptism. Page 100. Why had my lot been so different from my mother's? Her master had died when she was a child, and she remained with her mistress till she married. She was never in the power of any master, and thus she escaped one class of the evils that generally fall upon slaves. When my baby was about to be christened, the former mistress of my father stepped up to me and proposed to give it her Christian name. To this I added the surname of my father, who had himself no legal right to it. For my grandfather on the paternal side was a white gentleman. What tangled skeins are the genealogies of slavery! I loved my father, but it mortified me to be obliged to bestow his name on my children. When we left the church, my father's old mistress invited me to go home with her. She clasped a gold chain round my baby's neck. I thanked her for this kindness, but I did not like the emblem. I wanted no chain to be fastened on my daughter, not even if its links were of gold. How earnestly I prayed that she might never feel the weight of slavery's chain, whose iron entereth into the soul. Page 101. Starting chapter 15, Continued Persecutions. My children grew finely, and Dr. Flint would often say to me with an exulting smile, "These brats will bring me a handsome sum of money one of these days." I thought to myself that God being my helper, they should never pass into his hands. It seemed to me I would rather see them killed than have them given up to his power. The money for the freedom of myself and my children could be obtained, but I derived no advantage from that circumstance. Dr. Flint loved money, but he loved power more. After much discussion, my friends resolved on making another trial. There was a slaveholder about to leave for Texas, and he was commissioned to buy me. He was to begin with $900 and go up to 12. My master refused his offer. "Sir," said he, "she doesn't belong to me. She is my daughter's property, and I have no right to sell her. I mistrust that you come from her paramour. If so, you may tell him that he cannot buy her for any money, neither can he buy her children." The doctor came to see me the next day, and my heart beat quicker as he entered. I never had seen the old man tread with so majestic a step. He seated himself and looked at me with withering scorn. My children had learned to be afraid of him. The little one would shut her eyes and hide her face on my shoulder whenever she saw him, and Benny, who was now nearly 5 years old, often inquired, "What makes that bad man come here so many times? Does he want to hurt us?" I would clasp the dear boy in my arms, trusting that he would be free before he was old enough to solve the problem. And now, as the doctor sat there so grim and silent, the child left his play and came and nestled up by me. Page 102. At last my tormentor spoke. "So you are left in disgust, are you?" said he. "It is no more than I expected. You remember I told you years ago that you would be treated so. So he is tired of you? Ha, 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 the virtuous madam don't like to hear it about, does she? Ha, ha, ha." There was a sting in his calling me virtuous madam. I no longer had the power of answering him as I had formerly done. He continued, "So it seems you are trying to get up another intrigue. Your new paramour came to me and offered to buy you, but you may be assured you will not succeed. You are mine, and you shall be mine for life. There lives no human being that can take you out of slavery. I would have done it, but you rejected my kind offer." I told him I did not wish to get up any intrigue, that I had never seen the man who offered to buy me. "Do you tell me I lie?" he exclaimed, dragging me from my chair. "Will you say again that you never saw that man?" I answered, "I do say so." He clenched my arm with a volley of oaths. Ben began to scream, and I told him to go to his grandmother. "Don't you stir a step, you little wretch," said he. The child drew nearer to me and put his arms round me as if he wanted to protect me. This was too much for my enraged master. He caught him up and hurled him across the room. I thought he was dead and rushed towards him to take him up. "Not yet," exclaimed the doctor. "Let him lie there till he comes to." "Let me go, let me go," I screamed, "or I will raise the whole house." I struggled and got away, but he clinched me again. Somebody opened the door and he released me. I picked up my insensible child, and when I turned, my tormentor was gone. Anxiously I bent over the little form so pale and still, and when the brown eyes at last opened, I don't know whether I was very happy. All the doctor's former persecutions were renewed. He came morning, noon, and night. No jealous lover ever watched a rival more closely than he watched me and the unknown slaveholder, with whom he accused me of wishing to get up an intrigue. Page 103. When my grandmother was out of the way, he searched every room to find him. In one of his visits, he happened to find a young girl whom he had sold to a trader a few days previous. His statement was that he sold her because she had been too familiar with the overseer. She had had a bitter life with him and was glad to be sold. She had no mother and no near ties. She had been torn from all her family years before. A few friends had entered into bonds for her safety if the trader would allow her to spend with them her time that intervened between her sale and the gathering up of his human stock. Such a favor was rarely granted. It saved the trader the expense of board and jail fees, and though the amount was small, it was a weighty consideration in a slave trader's mind. Dr. Flint always had an aversion to meeting slaves after he had sold them. He ordered Rose out of the house, but he was no